Today is March 21st, 2021, and this is Movie Podcast 3-5. I'm Todd Gasawara. Almost got my name.
My good friend, it's okay.
And we skipped last week. We had a brief hiatus because just lots of stuff going on. I did want to thank, however, our old friend Eric Hicks for joining us in podcast number 354. That was awesome, and we're going to be trying to get other old friends to join us over the next weeks and months, so that should be a lot of fun. So a couple of items. Item number one, and this is the scariest of them all, is I upgraded my MacBook Pro to Big Sur during the hiatus because I read that the software I use is compatible with it now, and the software is Audio Hijack, by the way, from Rogue Amoeba, and it does seem to be working. We did a 5-second recording before we started, and that seemed to work okay. And now we'll see if Audacity, which is what I use to edit the audio, also works. So, well, fingers crossed. I have alternatives. It doesn't work, though. I can always move the audio to a Windows machine and edit it there, I'm sure. At any rate.
I used to worry so much about macOS upgrades, and then it just seemed like a couple of years ago they stopped being as destructive as they used to be in terms of breaking everything. But for a long time, I had the same reaction of, is this a good idea to do the upgrade? Is it not? When is it safe? And then I started just, I guess, throwing caution to the wind and saying, I'll take a gamble on it.
Yeah, in my case, there are, Rogue Amoeba is very transparent. And they do tell you, hey, you know, we're not ready for Big Sur, or we're in beta, and if you're not comfortable with beta, you know, just stick to what you got. We'll be out. And now they're in production. The other one, though, is Audacity, which is an open source project. And that one's always been a little flaky. In fact, it never really worked. Like, I can't record audio with it. I can edit audio with it, but I don't think I've been able to record audio directly into it, you know, like for a test solo podcast where I want to test a microphone or something. So that's always been a little flaky. And quite frankly, the upgrade to Audacity is always a hassle because there's multiple parts. You got to remember to bring in the various add-ins to let you write to an MP3 file and stuff. But at any rate, I will exhibit a number of superstitious behaviors, including knocking on wood, crossing my fingers, hope this audio stuff works under Big Sur. I am using an Intel-based Mac. I'm not using my M1. So I still have not tried recording on that.
Well, with the war that Intel is now having on Mac M1s with their advertising,
oh boy,
better hope they don't weaponize the Intel Macs. That is very amazing how they have basically decided to go after Apple directly and, you know, point out some things that obviously, you know, they talk about how the battery life isn't as great as it seems, but then at the same point, they point out that, you know, the Acer that they compared it against, the battery life wasn't as good as it said anyway either. So, be careful what you point out. People in glass houses, the old adage.
The other interesting thing about that, it's not in our show notes, but since you brought it up, it is an interesting topic. They contracted Justin Long, formerly the Mac and I'm a Mac commercials from Apple, to be him. You know, he starts saying, hi, I'm a... And then he says Justin Long and launches into his pro Intel movement. So he has been corrupted by the dark side.
Yes.
Hey, money will do that, right? Hey, we could be bought.
Oh, yeah. I can be bought by Intel. If Intel would like to buy me for anything, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, we'll plug anything, you know, anything that's legal.
For the right price.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be able to be bought for illegal items, you know.
But at any rate, so I just wanted to point out one thing you will not see and one thing you will hear is that I've been, you know, at work, I had to go take in an old webcam. It was an old it was an old Microsoft LifeCam, like from 2010 or 2009. And it was okay, but it was like getting stuck. Like it would not, sometimes it would not start up if you just leave the PC on and you come back to it and so forth. So I bought a newer life cam and then I thought, you know, John and I only publish audio, but we do use video to, you know, for visual cues, like, you know, is, you know, if I need to, if I'm going to talk over John, I can kind of tell when he's going to stop to talk and things. So video is useful even on audio podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things I found out. I have a Lenovo whatever notebook at work, runs Windows 10, and I didn't realize how bad its webcam was. It is terrible compared
it's
to the live
true.
Cam.
It is true how webcams are so variable. And I have one of those old life cams as well that, you know, a lot has been made about the quality of a MacBook webcam isn't as good as it should be.
Yeah.
But compare that to the life cam, the old life cam I have from 2008 or so, and it's 10 times better. So webcams are definitely things that have made incremental strides that you don't notice until you compare them side by side.
Yeah, in fact, what I'll do for John, you won't see it. So I'm backlit and all kinds of bad things. But so I'm using the Logitech webcam right now. It just auto-adjusted when I told you it was backlit. But I'm going to switch briefly to the FaceTime HD camera built into MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John can see me. And it's actually not bad. It's soft focus, you know.
Can't see you right now.
Oh.
So.
Oh, okay. I'll switch back. But I'll do a A/B thing on for the podcast. So you can see my ugly mug, such as it is, and you'd say, "Oh yes, turn off the camera." But but that said, so it's the MacBook Pro's camera is not bad. Way better than the Lenovo, in my opinion. But it is kind of soft focus. The Lenovo is just plain old faded out. It looks like I'm a ghost, you know, in a virtual background. This one's not too bad. I'm a little bit. I'm backlit, so you know I'm a little bit darker than the MacBook's front-facing cam, which I think does a better job of actually figuring out, you know, what the lighting is. But anyway, it's clearer, and I'm playing with that. That's not so much important if you're listening to podcasts. What is important, and you may scream at me because I did it. So I decided to test the. It's a Logitech C925E webcam, and I decided to test its microphone for this podcast instead of using the usual Blue Yeti I use. I also used my. What did I buy? I bought an Anchor sound cord that I used for a couple of podcasts, but I thought that was a little soft, so I switched back to Blue Yeti for our podcast with Eric a couple weeks ago. And I'm using the Logitech's built-in webcam's built-in microphone. I think it's actually two for this podcast, and we'll see what it sounds like. So yeah, it's been interesting. You know, the other thing that is when you add a webcam to a device that already has a webcam, like a notebook, is that the webcam usually is mounted a little higher. Yeah. So you're less likely to be looking up, you know, one's nostrils. And as I was commenting to some folks over the past week, is this, you know, this year of the pandemic, I've really gotten to study a lot of nostrils in the last year. I mean, you know, it's not something you normally look at or seek to, well, you know, I guess some people might, but I don't seek to look at nostrils. But I've been sort of forced to look at people's nostrils for the last year. Because their webcam is just way too low. It's usually pointed up, you know, at their nose, kind of at their chin, especially if they're using a notebook. So it's been, I thought, well, I, you know, my nostrils are not, you know, attractive at all either. So I thought I'd mount the webcam a little bit higher and see how that goes.
Yeah, okay. I struggle with the same thing with some of the angles that I use in my different offices where I'm trying to make it so that people don't have to look up at me. In fact, that's why I'm using a webcam that's so old, is because it's the one I have, and if I use where my MacBook is, then people will be seeing my chin and, you know, my mouth and not really the rest of me. So
right.
Sometimes it's a struggle between bad webcam with a better angle or good webcam with, you know, a horrible angle.
Right. So I'm pretty happy with this. I mean, I'm looking at my little image in John... of what John can see. And I can tell that I look like I'm in a shadow and stuff, but it's okay. He has enough visual cues to know when I'm, you know, going to say something or whatever. Okay, next up is a little bit of a rant, and that's with styluses. As, you know, as John knows, I've become kind of a stylus fanatic over the last couple of years, mostly because of my Doodle a Day project. And although I mostly use an Apple Pencil, these days an Apple Pencil 2 with iPad Pro, I haven't been experimenting with a lot of devices, mostly Chromebooks. The first couple of Chromebooks I bought, a Samsung and a Acer? Yeah, Acer. Both came with styluses. In fact, they're both Wacom EMR styluses, which are battery-less active styluses. I assume it uses some kind of induction to get the power to it or something. But they're pretty good, but they tend to be little. They're not really designed as pens. They're really like little sticks. For those of you who remember the pocket PCs with little styluses that used to come stuck in them, kind of that kind of size. And so, you know, I bought a, last year I bought a, what did I buy? Was it a, shoots, I can't remember now. It might have been an Acer. I bought a real, oh yeah, Acer Spin, which did not come with a stylus, but can use what's called a USI, Universal Stylus Initiative. That's, you know, a multi-company standard of sorts. That was supposed to take over the world and, you know, makes it easy to use the same stylus with different devices. Well, you know, I bought that Lenovo stylus, which is awful. I mean, it literally fell apart and I had to put it back together. And I kind of been soured on that. And it's been really difficult to find USI styluses. But I noticed the last week or so, the Wacom EMR is technology is being used in a number of third-party styluses, including some kind of well-known pen makers like Lamy. I don't know if you're ever a pen person, John, but there's a company called Lamy, L-A-M-Y. That makes really nice passive styluses, you know, just sort of, what's the stuff we used to use in the pocket PC? The capacitive stylus, those kind of things. And nice pens, you know, just regular old pens with ink. And they now have a Wacom EMR pen. It's a little bit pricey. It's about $70, so it's way cheaper than an Apple Pencil, but about twice the price what I paid for the Lenovo USI stylus. But I'm kind of tempted to buy one since I have two EMR Chromebooks to play with. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking maybe Wacom's EMR is going to become the de facto standard for styluses, whatever, at least for Chromebooks, because people are adopting it. I mean, and big companies, you know, just not kind of no-name companies you never heard of. And with the USI styluses, except for Lenovo, they're all kind of no-name. You know, like, who's this person, you know, or who's this company? So, anyway, that's my rant. I really don't need another EMR. I really don't need a stylus for any of my Chromebooks. They all have them now, but I'm tempted just for my doodle-a-day project purposes.
Well, for a long time, I was in search of the best stylus, and then when I went down to just using an iPad, and I got an Apple Pencil, that's kind of been fine for me, so I've stuck with that. But if I was on different devices, I could see the search would probably still be continuing.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're on an Apple iPad Pro, and you have the money to buy an Apple Pencil or Apple Pencil 2, depending on which device you have, you should definitely get it. It is awesome, especially Apple Pencil 2, because it has a reasonable charging mechanism versus the near idiotic Apple Pencil 1, which you need to plug in vertically into the Lightning port.
I always thought that was Apple just punking us, especially since the Apple Pencil 2 came out about a year after the original Apple Pencil. But then they doubled down by putting the Apple Pencil 1 on the iPad Mini.
Yes.
So I thought for sure after the Apple Pencil 2 came out, we wouldn't see anything else that used the Apple Pencil 1. And I don't know. Apple needs to get rid of that design. That is just a really stupid looking design.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a rumor that Apple's going to introduce an iPad Mini Pro this year. In fact, the original rumor was there was supposed to be an announcement on the 23rd, which is 2 days from today. But now I'm hearing rumors of, or reading rumors, I should say, of some kind of Apple event in April. And nobody's talking about an iPad Mini Pro, so may not happen, but I'm really hopeful. I would really like to see an iPad Mini Pro that uses an Apple Pencil too.
Yeah, it would be very tempting to buy an iPad Mini Pro if one were to exist.
Exactly.
But yeah, there have been rumors as recently as March 17th, Mac Rumors reported the iPad Mini Pro, which was something that Bloomberg had pointed out. And if it's a Pro, then I would assume it should support the second-gen Apple Pencil, which I'd pick one up just to play with it.
I would, too.
We will see if it actually exists or not.
Yeah, if it's not exorbitantly expensive, I would, too. And the other rumor, and again, these are all rumors, is that the latest Apple iPad Mini 5 has kind of a big bezel. I'm looking at my iPad Mini 4 right now. And the rumor is that they're going to dump the bezel, so it's going to be all screen, which is going to increase the size from whatever it is now, it's 7.9 or whatever, to like nearly 9 inches, which is, you know, just shy of the original iPad. So, in a much smaller form factor. So,
has a big bezel just sounds like a pejorative way to say something else. It sounds like a bad euphemism. Oh, that guy's got a huge bezel.
Yeah, I really should get some plastic surgery done. But anyway, John, so that's all I really have. You know, it's just not a lot this week. One rant, a couple of observations, but John's got a bunch of stuff.
Well, yeah, I have some interesting stuff that I've been getting back into, and I sort of mentioned it a few months ago when I talked about Homebridge, the software that lets you connect older IoT things to your HomeKit installation, your Apple HomeKit. And what I've started doing recently is upgrading my what I used to have around the house of various security cameras. Now, the cameras I have are all internal because I live in an apartment building and really there's nothing to look at outside anyway. But they were mostly for pets. And then for a number of years, I had no pets that were running around. And then 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, my wife and I adopted two kittens.
Nice.
Which are, they're 7 weeks old today. So they are very active and playful. In fact, I'm surprised they have not made an appearance yet on the podcast. But they will probably at some point attack my foot or something like that. And thankfully, they don't have teeth big enough to bite to the point where I can, you know, you'll hear me react to them. But so I thought I need to look back into the IoT world for some home automation things. And the old cameras I had were 10 years old. They were always a pain to set up because they all kind of functioned autonomously. They had a web interface or an RTSP stream that you could connect to. They couldn't connect to HomeKit. They couldn't connect to really anything modern. So I threw them out because there just wasn't going to be anything else I was going to do with the things. And they were always, they always kind of concerned me at just their quality. And I started looking into things that supported HomeKit Secure Video. And HomeKit Secure Video is Apple's latest version of HomeKit Video that was rolled out last year. I think it was iOS 13.4 or something like that, brought HomeKit Secure Video. And I thought, if I'm going to buy some cameras, I want them to all support that. And then I realized that for the use scenarios I had two different companies that I liked the products they had. Both of them supported HomeKit, so I thought, well, I'll buy both and see how it works. So the first company is Aqara, A-Q-A-R-A. They build all of their stuff around the Zigbee home automation protocol, which has been around for a while. But they've started adding HomeKit into their things. And the nice thing is once you have one of their cameras, it becomes a Zigbee hub in your house. So if you've never invested in Zigbee, you just buy one of their cameras and all of a sudden you can add lower cost Zigbee accessories to your Aqara, and then hopefully those will also expose out to HomeKit. It's a very weird world where we have all these competing standards. So I picked up one about a month ago that was a HomeKit secure video camera for, I think I paid 50 or 60, and now it's 69. The prices fluctuate on these, you know, up and down here and there. But it's been pretty cool. And, it, you know, the motion detection was the newest thing that I've never had before. I've had cameras before, but I've never had on-device motion detection. The audio now is a given. It used to be 10 years ago that those cameras maybe supported some sort of two-way audio. Now they all support two-way audio, which is very useful and kind of cool to be able to tap in. So when the kittens are moving around, if I want to hear if they're making noise, I can turn the audio on and listen. But the Aqara camera, the problem with it, like most cameras, is that it needs power. And sometimes you can't put it in an easy to, you know, create power situation. And I live in an apartment, so I'm not going to be drilling into the wall and putting in, you know, power jacks and everything else. So I found another camera by Eufy, E-U-F-Y. And Eufy is a brand of anchors, so if you're familiar with Anchor, it's the same company. Eufy makes a battery-operated camera, which claims that it can get up to 6 months on a single charge. It charges over USB-A or USB micro. But, of course, then that means I also have to have the Eufy infrastructure in my my little apartment here. So I had to get... The starter kit comes with a base that you can use to build a security system around if you want. And but the cameras are interesting in that they are not live streaming 24/7 because they are battery operated. They tend to only turn on when you ask them to turn on or when they record motion. So if they record motion, they switch on their recording feature, they record whatever it's seeing, and if you try to bring up the camera, it will bring up a live stream, but it takes it 5 seconds or so to come on. So that's how they can get that 6 months of battery life. They aren't always streaming something. But I've been pretty happy with those. The quality is a little bit lower than the Acara cameras, but it also supports HomeKit. So in my HomeKit screens, I have all the, you know, it looks like it's all one cohesive system because it's camera, camera, camera in the various rooms, but they're all, they go to two different backends. I'm about to make things even more complex because I found that Acara has these three function switches which allow you to basically map two or three different actions to one button. It's a push button that you can do either a tap, a double tap, or a long press to trigger what I'm hoping would be HomeKit scenes and other HomeKit stuff. But I've never used those before, and it's actually a cool idea that I wouldn't have to tell a home assistant like Siri to do something. I could actually, you know, have a little button to press, like I'm back in the Stone Ages.
Hey, I have a question. So mm-hmm. I noticed that for the Acara, like mm-hmm. many IoT devices, it only works on 2.4 gigahertz, which is 802.11b. I don't see anything on the Eufy that says what Wi-Fi type it requires. Is it what does, is you it know, also 11b or doesn't care?
I think it's also 11b over the 2.4, which is fine because I run my IoT WLAN over 2.4. I don't run it over 5 gigahertz anyway.
Yeah, because almost no IoT device supports 5 gigs, so that I found.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure the Eufy is running over that as well. But I can actually, the Eufy, come to think of it, is connecting to its base, and its base is hardwired into the router. So I don't think any of those devices are actually directly connected to Wi-Fi.
Ah, it's on base. Got it.
Yeah, and its base, it does support Wi-Fi on its base, but I'm looking to see what it says in the Wi-Fi setup. Yeah, only 2.4 gigahertz on the Wi-Fi for Eufy as well.
Got it. Which, makes sense. It's just the way IoT is. It probably has to do with wall penetration and all kinds of other stuff.
Well, and I'm sure the chips are cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, 2.4 gigahertz chips.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I'm looking to add is a smart lock for my door, which I've been trying to find one for a few years now that's been low cost and, you know, to take a gamble on because I don't, you know, I'll probably take it with me when I leave or might leave it here. Who knows? But there's a new one by a company that's branded as VocaLink, which I've never heard of. I think it's just a, you know, another one of these companies that pops up that you go, that looks interesting. But they offer a deadbolt that has both combination, you can put in a code, but you can also use a key as a key override, and then it supports HomeKit as well. So if we have pet sitters come over and keep an eye on our pets, they can have a code to get in. And the door lock is the actual key is a quick set keyway, the KW1 keyway, which is probably the most popular keyway in the United States, which means I can key it to the same keys that my door uses existing. So don't have to worry about rekeying or having another key to carry around as a backup. I can just use the same one key. But that one I'm interested in just to see how it works to use that. It runs off of AA batteries. Say it lasts 4 to 6 months.
Hmm.
So we will see how often those have to be changed.
I'm looking. I never heard of VocaLink, which is spelled V-O-C-O-L-I-N-C, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They have all kinds of stuff. They have air purifiers, and they have a smart diffuser for people into scented kind of things. And they've got, I don't know what a contact sensor. Like a touch sensor. A smart Bluetooth contact sensor. Wi-Fi outlets. It's pretty cool, actually.
So this stuff is, you know, it's interesting to me because now that Apple has open sourced HomeKit for a few years now, it's almost like we're hitting a stride where a lot of places that used to support, you know, Google and Alexa or Amazon, they're now dropping that support and going to HomeKit. And I suspect it might be just that if they're going to offer integration, that's the integration that more people are looking for, that are going to spend money on some of these things.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, but it is very interesting to see. Because, for example, the VocaLink, it does not work with Google or Amazon. It says HomeKit only.
Wow.
And wow. The other ones are starting to become a little bit more solo HomeKit. So.
You know, my theory about that is, A, it's cheaper, right, to just have one engineering team. And B, it's probably, you know, fewer to technical support calls, because in general, I found that when I, you know, try to pair something with my Apple device, it's way easier than trying it with any other kind of platform. It tends to work. They also have a Wi-Fi light strip for those of you getting ready for some kind of holiday decoration. So very interesting. Never heard of this company before.
Yeah. So I will be, you know, giving updates over the next few weeks about my random automations and connections. But it is an interesting thing to start exploring. And I at least have a reason to do it now. But yeah. I'm curious to hear if people, you know, if any of our FISIF listeners would like to give me their thoughts on automation. And if I come up with cool things, you will definitely hear about it here.
Now, I can understand how you heard about Eufy, since it's an anchor product. But how did you hear about these others? Just by research on the net?
Yeah, literally just Googling HomeKit secure video, you know, what devices support it. Because I knew I wanted everything to be able to connect to it. And so it was doing that to figure it out.
Very, very interesting. Another brand to take a look at. So that's all we got. One thing I did want to mention is a very surprising thing is, oh, I see John's got more stuff, more notes, but I'll note that. So I still really haven't played much with my Raspberry Pi 400, but this is surprising. The $80 10-inch, I think it's 10-inch or 11-inch LCD external display I bought, you know, to pair with it. I've been using that a lot. Because I use it as a second monitor for my laptop. And, you know, my laptop's just sitting on, like a dining room table, right? So, and it's very small and light, so I can just, you know, move it on a table temporarily and have a second display and move it off. And it, quite frankly, it's much more stable to use an HDMI output than to use Sidecar with an iPad, in my opinion. I mean, you know, your mileage may vary, but that's been my experience. So, yeah, the unexpected consequence of the Raspberry Pi 400 is not the 400, but the $80 monitor I bought for it.
Sometimes the most surprising things are the most useful.
Yeah. The other thing is I bought a couple of ring lights, and, you know, I really haven't been using them because, A, they don't really make me look all that much prettier. But B, they kind of just shine in my eyes, and it's kind of irritating. You know, I'm gonna put one on so John can see if he can detect a difference. I don't know if he can or not.
I can just see a ring in your glasses. That's all.
That's it. There you go. Right. So yeah, I don't know about the value. Yeah, if you have glasses on like I do, and I should mention John also normally wears glasses when we have our podcasts. I don't know how much value you're gonna get out of this stuff. It's the light ring. I don't know. Or you got to switch to contacts. But there you go. I'm sure in some situations it's useful. The one I happen to bought is battery operated. It's rechargeable. So, you know, you can carry it with you. I think it's designed for your iPhone or Android phones. You can just clip it, you know, try not to cover your camera. And you can use it with your phone, which is kind of interesting. I assume a lot of people do that. Put my little ring light somewhere, I won't break it. And that's about it, I think. It's just been super busy with everything else in the world. And I realize I've been turning my head away from the microphone, so we'll see how using this microphone works. How's the audio quality been, John, since you've been having to listen to me for the last half hour?
It seems pretty good, so we'll have to see how it sounds on production, but I think it's okay.
I suspect it'll be it'll be softer compared to yours, is my suspicion. John's using a nice pair of headphones with a built-in mic, so we will see. But at any rate, We'll probably regroup in a week or so, and hopefully we'll have another of our friends with us and see what they've been up to during this year of the pandemic. In the meantime, we have crossed the one-year threshold for the pandemic since our last podcast, and John has gone into daylight savings. We in Hawaii do not observe it, so we are now 1 hour further away than we used to be. In any case, Mobile Views Podcast 355, and we are done.